Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University of
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, you know, don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
All right, welcome in to another BuzzBeat podcast. This is Brian Geisinger. I will be joined by Lee. Richie is also here producing. No Spencer today. He's out. But with the NBA season coming up pretty quickly, like preseason games, we'll be live a month from now. The regular season in 6 weeks. We were kind of just talking about the timeline on the horizon. I know this has not been the most eventful or positive of off seasons for the Charlotte Hornets. With that in mind, we're going to continue to have our eyes on the 2023 NBA draft. Lee and I have done a couple already previews looking ahead, mostly at college prospects, most of whom I would say are 2023 prospects. Maybe some are guys that project further down the line. But the player we're going to talk about today, as opposed to doing a handful of prospects, we're going to focus in on one guy because this is the type of prospect that deserves our full attention for a full episode. This is one of the best prospects for the 2023 draft. You could probably make a case that he is the best prospect for the 2023 draft, or, you know, 1A, 1B, something along those lines. One of the best lead guard prospects that we have seen, I would say, in recent years. And that would be one Scoot Henderson, the 18-year-old out of Georgia, who is heading into his second season with the G League Ignite. Very excited to see what he looks like with the new cast of talent around him, a new schedule up ahead this season. But as someone who didn't see any of Scoot on the prep levels or on, like, you know, EYBL levels, just my first experience with him was his action with the Ignite last season. I came away very impressed. But before we fully dive into Scoot, Lee, how are you doing here?
I'm great, man. We were also talking a little bit before the pod just about how, you know, we've had kind of a different version of content coming out throughout the summer in the offseason, which I think has been cool. Richie's done some really nice stuff with former Hornets players like Eddie Robinson, and he had a podcast on Wednesday with Knicks Film School. Talking some NBA offseason stuff. Me and Brian have been doing a lot of NBA draft, kind of looking ahead type stuff. And then we've also kind of sprinkled in, you know, some fun, like, random Hornet stuff as well. So it's been fun to kind of change gears a few different times this summer as we lead up to, you know, basically 6 weeks from the season opener, obviously even less than that to the preseason opener. We will have plenty to talk about once the season gets started, but it's just nice to, you know, kind of do some different podcasts throughout the off season. And everything else is good my way. Looking forward to a nice weekend. And also, of course, shout out to all of our BuzzBeat Plus and BuzzBeat.substack.com listeners. You know, those are our premium followers, so we can't thank them enough. And jump on board if you haven't already. We really appreciate everybody listening.
Yeah, thank you for getting that in, and shout out to the guys from Nick's Film School having Richie on. Those are good people. I have not listened to that yet, but that is going to be on the workout playlist at some point for me this weekend. So excited to dive in. And there were even people today, we're recording this on Friday the 9th. I saw people kicking around, you know, sort of hypothetical Randall Reddish to Charlotte trades for Gordon Hayward. I saw that floating around on Twitter this morning and afternoon. So an apt time for Richie to go on and talk with those guys. So there's also going to be hopefully a little bit of a video component to this pod. You know, we're not going to be doing, play-by-play breakdowns here, but there is going to be a bit of a film component. Hopefully, you know, some of you guys have caught Scoot Henderson previously, but if not, there's going to be some film packages sprinkled in here. So without further ado, let's actually just dive in here. Scoot Henderson, first thoughts are an absolutely special athlete at the guard position for sure, but also just as like a basketball prospect in general. Insane speed. High quickness, elite burst. Some of, I think, the best burst with the basketball, without the basketball, that you're going to see of any prospect, especially at the guard position. But just absolutely 0 to 100 in the blink of an eye. This guy is an instant advantage creator, an easy advantage creator. And I think with these lead guard prospects like Scoot, that is absolutely one of the things, Lee, that I'm always going to be focused on. And this guy is able to touch the paint with a live dribble, either one-on-one, attacking and closeout, certainly in the pick and roll, definitely in transition where it feels like he's almost a bit of a cheat code. But he's the kind of guy that I think projects to being a primary initiator, a guy that runs a lot of pick and rolls that you put like a spread offense around him. And you let this guy just cave in the defense and get into the lane and make plays. A special vertical athlete off, you know, his ability to go from first step to the first couple of dribbles to getting in the air, especially off one foot, getting in the air to finish at the basket, especially when he's able to sort of like turn the corner, get downhill and get an edge on rim protection, get an edge on his defender. Cause as soon as he has that, if you give this guy a sliver, he's going to beat you to the rim. Like he's always going to win the race. Unless the help is defense is sort of like right lined up directly in front of him. So again, for a 6'3", 6'4" guard that is continuing to get stronger. Again, he just turned 18. I think back in February, but a special athlete with his ability to get downhill, to get into the paint, the burst and the vertical pop. So just continuing maybe with this focus on his athleticism and maybe also initial first impressions. Lee, as you dove into Scoot film, either in advance of this pod or as you were watching maybe guys like Dyson Daniels or Jaden Hardy this past season with the G League Ignite or Marjon Beauchamp, what are some of your thoughts on Scoot initially, specific towards his athleticism and sort of maybe what you think of him and how that translates to the next level here?
Well, I think you basically led off with the term of, you know, like rocket athlete, nuclear athlete, like whatever kind of like, you know, explosive descriptor you want to put there, like it tracks. So like the physical profile and like the functional vertical basketball athleticism is what's, you know, what just jumps off the screen with Scoot. I think one of the other like big things that I keep coming back to is, you know, he's 18 years old right now. He was a 17-year-old in the G League and he averaged 14 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, 3.5 assists. This is kind of in their quote unquote actual regular season is what those stats come from. They also had like a showcase season as well. So those would be a little bit separate, but that gives you an idea of like how productive he was as a 17-year-old teenager in the G League, which obviously if you're a listener of this podcast, you know, is like everything from, you know, young prospects like this to 35-year-old NBA vets that played 10 or 12 years in the league and are kind of either still hanging on or trying to get back into the league for like one more opportunity. So, you know, the picture I'm trying to paint here is that this kid is a 17-year-old that, although maybe not in the most efficient manner, and we'll get into some of his like numbers as well, but just from a productivity standpoint, because of what his athleticism lends him like to be able to do on a basketball court, it's a pretty unique situation with his age, athleticism, and production at a really, really high level. And I was going back through like the past like three or four drafts, just kind of like refreshing my mind on all of the different guard prospects that we've seen. And there's been some awesome guard prospects, but from a pure basketball athleticism standpoint, the only guy that I could really find in the last three drafts that even kind of sniffs his territory for a lead guard, by the way, I'm like excluding weight, like is Jalen Green, who obviously was also a G League Ignite guy. I think Scoot is probably farther along as a passer already than Jalen Green is. Jalen is probably a little ahead of schedule in the shooting. And I'm not even necessarily trying to compare them too much. I'm just trying to paint the perspective for the listeners of kind of how the rarefied air of athleticism he lives in. I mean, we've had all these really awesome lead passing guards, like a gluttony of lead passing guards these past few drafts when you go Halliburton, Giddey, Cunningham, Ball. But like Scoot is just a different type of guy. And obviously there's pros and cons to that. But that's what jumps off the page to me. It's what you already alluded to. It's the explosive, unique athleticism that is like a once in every 3 year kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go back the last three draft cycles to like 2020, I think the guys that compare to him in terms of speed and burst, it's Ant Edwards, it's Jaden Ivey. And they're different players. I mean, Edwards obviously is, you know, much stronger, right? Another Atlanta guy.
Ivy's a good one.
Yeah, Ivy, certainly, you know, still a little bit at this point, still, bigger than Scoot, but has that kind of just, Randy Moss running a fly pattern, just elite speed. If you go back to 2019, you could probably pick, Ja Morant, right? Another one of these sort of like lead guard freak athletes, yep. But I think even some of the better analogs, you've got to go further back to, John Wall or Rose or, those types of guys, which again, I know we always listed off a ton of incredible players, including some all-time players, some of the best players, guards of the last decade. And yeah, I mean, he is that level of prospect. What I would say with Scoot is that it's not just the speed, which again, let me circle back real quickly. This guy's ability to go from, like, there were times watching him in the G League this season where you would see him like catch the ball and he would be able to kind of like ramp up a little bit and get a couple of steps before hitting the screen or before getting to the defender. And at that point, like, it's too late if you don't have guys set up in front of him. But there were other times too where he'd either go from a standstill and just race by the guy in front of him, just attack top foot and get downhill. There were other times too. There was one game I was watching. I think it was the Mexico City game where he catches the ball, I think on a kick out or something. He's a couple steps inside the arc. He starts to reverse dribble. Like, he's moving away from the basket and his guy is sort of like slowly sliding to come out to him. And he just plants his back left foot and then just immediately goes downhill. So, and just races by his guy and gets to the rim before the help defense can even get there. Just again, even when he's at seemingly a disadvantage, either there's guys that are in decent position or he's coming from a standstill or he's even literally moving away from the target. He's still able to flip the switch. And again, especially going to his right, his ability to just get into the paint, get to the rim, and finish with that really special vertical athleticism is just so impressive. It jumps off the screen every time you watch him. But what I would add, and I think it's an important part of his game, is that he's not just straight line burst. He has the ability to mix tempos. He has the ability to mix speeds, to mix direction, and you see him employ all of these things at a level that's pretty advanced. I would say his ability to actually like use skill, not just the downhill drive. Oh, there's a crease. Let me go fly in and attack this. His ability to cross over, the quick, you know, 1-2 dribble crossovers. We can talk about the handle more. I'm not sure here you can see Scoot dribbling up the court here. And just that quick one cross, then the second cross, he fails to finish through contact at the rim on that play. But you do see, like, even against the set defense, as he's walking
dribble combination. Court,
yeah. And I do think that's an area where he can improve. And I think he will. But yeah, the 1-2 quick combo crossovers are just nasty. And he can completely split a defense with those in the blink of an eye. I also think, and this is one of the things that was really impressive, I think, for a guy who was, you know, 17 years old for half the season with the Ignite, playing with a bunch of, future NBA prospects, playing against a bunch of vets, like you mentioned, Lee, was his patience. There is a genuine poise to this guy's game, his ability to snake pick and roll. That as soon as he turns the corner, it doesn't have to be a beeline to the rim. Like, he's willing to make moves, to show patience. If you just drop, if the screen defender, the opposing center just drops, he's very comfortable shooting off the dribble from the mid range. So he's already giving you some mid range scoring. And I think that is pretty impressive. I mean, we can talk about the shot because that's going to be a big deal for him and sort of is maybe the next big step, but that mid range scoring for him is pretty darn impressive. So again, the poise, because he's will be patient with the ball. He'll let the roller get downhill. He's willing to snake back. He's willing to change directions to sort of like show help defenses and screen defenders different looks, but also the willingness to not force it if it's not there, to either just take the pass that's available. If there's a spot up guy, you know, if help comes at the nail and there's just a kick out to Jaden Hardy, or if there was a kick out to Marjan, or his ability to simply just rise up and take those 19-foot pull-ups. Like, that's a superstar shot, right? Those are the superstars going to take those shots. And so I think it was pretty impressive that he was able to get to that stuff. And then just the sort of like the last thing I would say before I flip it back to you, Lee, and feel free to take it in any direction, is it is almost comical when you're able to give this guy some advantage to play off of before he has the basketball. Like, whether that's him, again, attacking in transition is sort of like the best case of this, right? Where, someone hits it ahead to him and already he's got, he's leading the break on the wing on a, 3-on-2 or whatever. Sometimes that is him getting to attack a closeout. If an opponent does give him a hard closeout, which you can maybe debate the merits of that given the 3-point shot and where it's at right now. But also, like, when they would put him in action, when the G League Ignite would put him in action and, run him off of a screen into a dribble handoff and then let him turn the corner. And again, it's just, he's going to force help rotations, doing stuff like that. He's going to force guys to collapse into the paint. It's incredible how often this guy was able to get into the paint and bring 3-4 help defenders with him. He's going to create a ton of open kickout threes. It's obvious. It's in his game. And I mean, there's, again, the shot's going to have to come online to sort of like allow those things to fully flourish. But I do love the fact that you can scheme up stuff for this guy too. You can put him in the action and that can really, really, really make him dangerous, because if you give him an advantage, he's already a better athlete than the guy guarding him, And I do think that will translate to most NBA defenders as well. So anyways, Lee, we'll just flip it over to you in terms of Scoot. Any other thoughts in terms of on-ball offense with Scoot Henderson you'd like to get in here?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I love the point you made regarding kind of his versatility and his ability to be put in offensive action, not necessarily as a lead attacker, although that's a pretty obvious quality of his, but you know, the dribble handoff stuff, the, you know, empty side isolation attack type stuff, he's got in the bag. I think you mentioned his poise and maturity, which is a great point. Obviously he's still a young player. You know, he's going to have his fair share of mistakes, but in terms of the way he kind of carries himself and the way he operates, it's such a positive indicator, in my opinion, because sometimes one of the hardest things to teach these advantage creation guards that are young is that when they beat their defender and they cause, you know, defenses to contract and to rotate, like getting them to understand sometimes that they've already done their job and that they don't need to kind of continue pushing that and get to the rim for a difficult finish, that they've already done their job. They've created the advantage. They've made the defense contract and rotate and to find the open players. That's like a big step for young guards to make as they're trying to like in their developmental arc. And he like kind of already has that. You alluded to the decision-making, the maturity and the poise. So his pick and roll ball handler numbers are really impressive. 0.987 points per possession per synergy, and, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's 90th percentile in the G League. Like these are professional point guards.
One point per possession is that's really good stuff, man.
And then when you take it to pick and roll, including passes, which is 126 possessions, which is like not nothing, it goes up to 1.1. points per possession, which is 94th percentile. So his efficiency actually goes up in the pick and roll when you include the times when he's kicking out or dumping off to open teammates, which just supports kind of the case you've already made for him as like a lead distributor.
Yeah, again, I think he's a good passer. I'm glad it seems like you're in agreement there, which makes me happy. I think some sort of like grade him out as like a average passer or whatever at this point. I tend to think he's pretty good, and I think there's a ton of room for improvement. I think he can become more manipulative. I think he can become better at reading backline help coverages. I think he can become a better skip passer. But as far as it goes, like getting into the paint and making like lay down passes, like he doesn't have tunnel vision. It's when he turns the corner, it's not just, oh, I got to get to the rim, which it is to an extent because like he can do that. But part of that process is him always being cognizant of where the rim protection is and being very good at lay down passes with either hand, I would say, in relatively crafty fashion. And I think that stuff is very important for him because there are some issues, as good as he is finishing, there are some issues going through contact, you know, so that I think Scoot possesses. However, those lay down passes are such a nice counter, right? Because if the 6'10 center is coming over to help and he gets him off his feet, Scoot's going to hit that lay down pass every time. And again, once he starts being better and more accurate with those skip passes, which again, I do think that's something he will improve on. We've seen plenty of advantage creators in the NBA get better at that stuff with time. Again, I think he has the ability to just create good looks. He projects as the kind of guy that can just slash a defense and create good looks for himself or for his teammates every time down the court. Now, I do think it's important. Richie, at some point, Richie's producing this. We appreciate him throwing in some of these clips here. You know, Richie showed a pull-up three out of the pick and roll that he hit. I think it was in the Detroit game or the Motor City game, forgive me, where the guard defender goes under and he's able to sort of like take just a quick little step back, pull, you know, off dribble three. I like the fact that he's willing to take those shots. Like, here you go. You see ball screen defender goes under, pretty easy, you know, rhythm, kind of like a half step back, not quite like a full space creation step back shot. But look, he didn't shoot a good number on threes in the stats that I'm looking at for the full season with the Ignite. This is 21 games. You know, he shot under 22%, only 2.5 3-point attempts per game. But like, I think the shot looks all right. I actually think some of the off catch, like the spot up shooting kind of release and gather, like I think all that stuff looks pretty good. I think the mid range shooting looks pretty good. He shot a good number from the free throw line, like almost 78%, not a ton of attempts, but there are like a lot of indicators to suggest that I think he's going to become a good enough of a pull up shooter that it's going to force teams just aren't going to be able to just go under, right? Because if he were playing in the NBA this season, that would be the coverage against him, right? Yep. Out of the pick and roll would be just go under, try to take away the drive, force this guy to be manipulative or to hit a three. And that's some of the stuff where he's going to have to become, he's going to have to improve. The shot's going to have to get better. And sort of, I think some of the second and third read playmaking will have to improve, or, you know, the third and fourth read playmaking. Cause I think he kind of knows what he's doing for himself, for the obvious kickouts, for the obvious lay down passes. I'm curious to see, you know, what more he can add, because I think he's already pretty intuitive in terms of like live dribble creating and scoring. All right, Lee, anything else you'd like to add in terms of on ball offense before maybe we shift around a little bit here with Scoot?
Yep. So the free throw numbers too, you know, they're probably a little depressed because they do the 1-for-2 in the G League as well. So like when you look
That's an important note.
When you look at those attempts, I think he'll be able to elevate that a little bit at the next level.
For sure. He's going to draw a ton of fouls. Like just it's with just, the way it is. Yeah, he's going to put pressure on the rim and he's going to draw contact.
So I think that is a pretty good synopsis as far as kind of like his on ball half court offense. If we could pivot a little bit, one kind of like higher level, more macro thought I have about Scoot that I think is really interesting is obviously he's going to be playing his second year here for the G League Ignite. And last year he was with Jaden Hardy and Dyson Daniels, who are like almost couldn't be two opposite players, but both like had usage and both were effective at times with the ball in their hands. So I just think Scoot's role this year is going to be so different and could be in a really positive way. Like he's going to be much more featured on the ball as like a primary offensive engine with Hardy and Daniels gone. And, you know, looking at kind of who they have coming in, I mean, like Sharif O'Neal is a big, Leonard Miller is kind of like a wing forward.
That's a really exciting, like, cause Miller as like a forward can like create advantage too. I believe Sidy Sissoko is coming over from France.
And the kid from Washington State, F.A. Abaji. I'm going to totally, name.
But that's a good, I mean, that's a good point because they also use like Pooh Jeter as like the veteran that could give them some like on ball reps. So like, yeah, Scoot is going to get more on ball primary reps this season. He got plenty last season in the G League. Like they fed him that stuff, but your point is good. I think it's going to be an on ball diet that looks a little bit more like probably what he projects to in the NBA, right? As opposed to, as opposed to it being sort of a mix and him splitting like those primary reps, especially with Daniels and Hardy. I thought he and Hardy had like, by the end of the season, had like awesome chemistry together. And like, I don't think, I mean, Hardy was playing great on his own and was like creating his own shots too, but there was plenty just like him being like, hey, if I just like space out on the wing while Scoot drives, like I'm going to get good looks. I thought those guys did a nice job kind of playing off of one another in a way that kind of excited me a little bit, thinking like further down the road, if Scoot ever gets in the backcourt where there's like a dual ball handler component to it, cough, LaMelo, Charlotte, cough. So I thought that was interesting, especially because the aforementioned LaMelo Ball, pretty good spot up shooter, as we've discussed plenty of times on this pod. So we can maybe circle back to that at the end, but I do think Scoot is a guy that would fit very nicely on the
one like going
for
like
yeah, I'm a big fan. And I should also say, I mentioned the mid-range shooting this year. Scoot shot 49% on pull-up jumpers this season. That's not an effective number. That's just raw field goal percentage. But again, speaks to this guy's ability to be pretty dynamic and to be poised when he's seeing that drop coverage. In terms of some of that sort of like off-ball stuff, and I not only was I impressed with him like attacking closeouts, because again, he's like a cheat code in that type of situation, but his willingness to move without the basketball, to be a cutter, to be a guy that is willing to, whether he's prowling the baseline or it's an action that the G League Ignite has called up that is involving him to slice and get backdoor. Here, they're going to throw it to the elbow on this play, the quick drop pass, and then just to the rim in a flash. And again, it's just a guy that is willing to move without the basketball. This is another clip we're just playing on the highlight package here. Scoot grabbing an offensive rebound against Motor City. This is something that's going to come lower down the scouting report with Scoot, but I love his willingness to offensive rebound. Like, he is a hellacious offensive rebounder. Every time I would watch a G League Ignite game, you know, this season, getting ready for the 2021 draft, or later on this summer, you know, sort of like trying to zero in on Scoot a little bit more, it's hilarious as soon as he's in the game. Like, you know, this dude, the first shot goes up by Hardy or someone else, like he's crashing the glass. And it is a hilarious time where you really get to see him. Maybe not hilarious isn't the right word. It is incredible to see him use that vertical leaping ability in these different roles, and to sort of lean into being a complimentary player at times and being a guy that you'll see a 6'11 guy camped under a defensive rebound, just like waiting for it to fall from the ceiling so they can grab it and go down on offense. And he'll come in from the opposite wing and jump high enough to snatch it before anyone taller than him can actually grab it. So just his ability to create not just extra possessions, but extra possessions that are sort of elevated in a way, right? Because he's probably not going to catch that offensive rebound and immediately go back up, but he can kick it out. So it's going to be a spot up three, or it's going to be a closeout to attack. I just think he did or he'll catch it, he'll reset, and then the defense is scrambled because his guy didn't box him out. So now all of a sudden the power forward is on Scoot Henderson. Well, he's going to drive right by that guy. So I just think he does a nice job hustling his way into just especially juicy sort of like extra possessions with his willingness to not just move without the basketball, but also in this case to hit the offensive glass. So Lee, what are your thoughts on sort of his off ball offense, or maybe some of the like, not intangible, that's not the right word here, but sort of like some of like the toolsier parts of his game without the basketball in the half court?
Yeah, I mean, he's a useful player. I mean, aside from all kind of like the standout stuff he has, I think what kind of like the off-ball movement, you know, his ability to cut within a half-court offense, his ability to offensive rebound in that kind of special like one-handed rebound clip that Richie just queued up prior when you were speaking, it really, to me, what it points to is like that functional basketball athleticism term that I keep coming to. And it's like,
great point.
Yes, he's an explosive athlete. Like, yes, he's awesome in transition because of that and his ball handling, but it's useful in a basketball context. He's not just a guy who's going to test out well like at a combine on a vertical. Like he will do that too. Don't get me wrong, but it actually impacts, you know, it impacts winning on both ends because he is aware of how to employ that athleticism to do good things for his basketball team. So, you know, all of those, like you said, kind of ancillary skills that his athleticism touches, it just points to the fact that he has like some know-how as a basketball player to like channel that athleticism in useful ways.
Him making like Marcus Smart style, like winning plays on the, you know, going for like an offensive rebound.
I almost said that earlier when you're
not, it's not, not on the, not on the on ball defense, to be clear, where there are some problems,
which we should, we should chat.
Yeah. Let's with that in mind, let's use that as a bit of a segue and let's flip over to the defensive side of the court. And let's maybe start with the point of attack and on ball defense. I think this is an area where like, it's pretty obvious that like Henderson needs work. It's not that he physically isn't gifted enough. Like he's got long arms. He's incredibly quick laterally. His hands are insanely quick, almost maybe to a fault. Like I think that allows him to sort of like, it, you know, in previous levels, and probably we'll see it again this season on the G League, that allows him to sort of like make up for not being as frisky as he should, or as like industrious as he should at the point of attack. I feel like often in pick and roll defense, I see him default to just going under the screen. And opposing ball handlers can shake him with a crossover or a spin move. They can reject. Like he just sort of like volunteers and gives up space right at the point of attack. And where you really need to have like some punch and some fight, all of a sudden the defense is like a little compromised already because Scoot is taking sort of like bad process guarding the initial ball screen. I think again, the friskiness, the screen navigation, it needs some seasoning. It's there some of the time, but I just think it's like a mentality thing. Clicking in on every possession where he's the one guarding a ball screen, I think is going to be a big deal. And look, for a guy that is, you know, we just talked about this a second ago, but Scoot's going to get more on ball reps this season for the Ignite. He projects to being a guy that's going to have a huge on ball role on the next level. This is something where you're probably going to want to see him improve. And we see plenty of primary ball handlers that struggle guarding pick and roll on the other end. Trae Young, Ja Morant, Luka Doncic. These guys all come in all different sizes, obviously, too. But that is something you're going to, I think, want to see, just given his athletic traits, given the length, given the hands. I think you can probably expect and at least hope for a little bit more from Scoot. I think he should be able to give you more impact at the point of attack, more impact guarding the basketball. I don't much prefer the closeout. Some of them are like pretty bad where like he's just like ball chasing and then he's forced into a closeout and the guy is driving by him. Like it's Scoot Henderson driving by somebody, you know, and it's all because he's taken sometimes it makes me feel like it's like an outfielder that's taken a bad path to catching a, like a line drive fly ball. And just the positioning is off. And so, you know, occasionally he has the athleticism to sort of like make up for taking a bad path, the quick hands, the ability to block a shot or to deflect and get a steal, to reach his hands in there. But often, again, especially once the competition becomes better and better, that's going to become something he's able to get away with far less frequently. And that seems like something he's really going to have to clean up. So I do think point of attack defense, close out ISO defense are two things that are he'll have to improve. Lee, what are your thoughts on Scoot defensively at this stage?
Yeah, I think that was all really well said. Okay, so there's two things, right? Like number one, obviously he's not limited athletically. He is limited a little bit by his size. You know, obviously he's not a 6'5", 6'6", brick house like some of these other just elite point of attack defenders are. He's just as athletic as any of them. He's probably got, like you said, just as good a hands as just about any of those kind of any counterparts he would have. But, well, he makes a great, you talk about the hands, he makes a great play there in the clip that Rich is playing right now. And then, of course, the explosiveness and the speed gets out in transition and makes a great play. We've got another pick and roll clip here where he gets beat. And that's what BG's talking about right there. It's kind of, I mean, part of it's youth. Part of it is like craftiness, for lack of a better word, like understanding angles, understanding driving lanes and like opposing guards attacking him and how to shut off some of that stuff. I think aside from the youth and the size, which are limiting factors for him defensively at this moment, I think the optimistic take is the tools that he has. Like,
yes,
the tools that he has that you cannot teach, but that you, if you're an effective like player development franchise, that you can kind of mold him into a more effective defender. I think that is very realistic. And if you're evaluating your drafting Scoot, like, you should be able to project him as a solid defender at some point in his career.
Yeah,
I think the other point I would make about, you kind of already talked about his role will be this year for the G League Ignite. He's going to be more featured as a primary player, being that he's a returning guy and Daniels and Hardy are gone. On the flip side of that, he is going to have to take more responsibility as a defender this season as well. So Daniels is gone. Daniels is a fantastic primary defender. Like, yeah, big time primary defender.
Marjan's gone too. Another good
Marjan's gone.
Wingy defender too.
Exactly. So like, and we'll see how some of these other kind of wing forward types can plug in. I would have a hard time projecting either of them as a good a defender as Daniels was. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, I'm incredibly excited about the offensive load responsibility that he will have to take on and seeing what he does with that. I am also excited to evaluate the defensive load that he is going to need to take on to kind of showcase to NBA scouts that he truly is like a surefire top five prospect, which I think if you drafted today, he probably would be. But we'll have to kind of sustain that through the year and fixing some of these issues we've seen.
Yeah, agreed. I do think it's one of those things that if we're projecting 5 years out and Scoot's, you know, in the last year of his rookie deal, he's already a star, or he's on year one of his, you know, max rookie extension, he's a star, et cetera, which, like, you know, I think there are plenty of outcomes and projections that it's not even the best case scenario. I think there's a lot of different outcomes for this guy that end up with him being, you know, a star level player. But assuming he's in that role, I do think there are some levels of Scoot where if the on-ball defense never quite matches the athleticism, depending on your roster construction around him, you can hide him. You know, you can stash him on a stationary shooter. You can stash him on a lower usage wing or something like that. And I think not only can he be fine in those scenarios, I think he's actually showed at a young age some pretty good fight as a help defender. His ability to like make weak side rotations, like watch where he starts. He's on the opposite side of the lane. He's able to get to the rim in time, good solid verticality on the contest, and then immediately Scoot. This is the clip Richie's playing. He's running in transition right to the rim.
That's really good.
Like, he goes from verticality rim stop defensively to other end and one layup in the span of like 4 seconds. And it's all because he was ready to rotate as the low man on the backside help there. So I that's one of my favorite like sequence clips that Scoot had this season in the G League. We talked about the quick hands, the athleticism. You know, I think he's the guy that should be able to get a lot of steals as an off-ball player, a guy that's able to get into passing lanes, a guy that he's going to dig. But I just like, but especially those rotations being timely, being in the right spots, that's going to make it easier if he turns out to be like mediocre to you know, subpar on-ball defender. I still think you're going to get some good stuff from him defensively, because I think there are some encouraging signs with the team defense. We know he's down to hit the defensive glass. He's down to stick his nose in there and try to, like, you know, block a shot or show some verticality at the rim. You know, he's willing to stick his nose in on that play. You know what I mean? And risk getting scored on or getting dunked on or whatever, and to get a stop. And obviously, like, once he has the ball in transition, he's a lightning bolt to the rim on the other side. So I come away pretty low on the on ball point of attack defense, pick and roll defense, but sort of encouraged knowing that there are some pathways to him being passable on the defensive side of the court depending on roster construction and also depending on some sort of like linear progression as a team defender, where he's not starting in the negative right now. Like, I think he's already like kind of capable in some of those capacities. So, Lee, we're kind of getting close to the end here, but do you have any other thoughts on Scoot's team defense? And then once we're done with that, I've got a couple like they're kind of like quick hitters on Scoot, sort of like wrap up and we can get out of here.
No, I think we've covered both ends pretty well. I am really excited, not only because of kind of the role projection that we're going to see with him this year. One other interesting note is the G League Ignite for the first time is going to play a full G League schedule this year, which is really cool, which means they'll also be eligible for the G League playoffs. So like, we're just going to get kind of a more like holistic look at these prospects this year, which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very cool. Glad. I mean, it felt like that was always in the cards, and they were sort of just like gonna, in part because the first year of the G League, you know, took place, you know, down in the bubble, and then this was sort of like the first year for them to like kind of see what the vision would look like without a full G League schedule. And I'm not surprised that we're getting to this point or getting back to this point. It makes a lot of sense. We also got the news break last week that along with the full G League schedule in about a little under a month from now, like 4 weeks from now, I think initially it was Rafael Bartholomew had it, but then Jonathan Gavoni ended up also reporting it from ESPN, was that we were going to get two games with Scoot Henderson in the G League Ignite. And I'm blanking on the team that Victor Wembanyama plays for over in France, but they're going to play two games in early October in Las Vegas.
And that's confirmed now?
That's confirmed.
Oh, that's awesome.
I believe those will also be broadcast on ESPN. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Assuming those guys are hopefully healthy and playing in those games, that's going to be really, really cool to see. And a unique, something that is we haven't seen before. You know, the number one, number two, I don't know, maybe you see Amon Thompson somewhere above those guys. But I think consensus, at least in I need to see more of the Thompson twins to sort of like rate those guys. I've seen far more Wembanyama and I've seen even more Scoot. So, but it's going to be awesome to see those guys going up against one another. And hopefully you know, everyone stays healthy and we get to see 30 plus minutes in both those games of those guys being on the court at the same time. And, you know, fingers crossed, there are some splash plays that involve the two of them. So with that in mind, Lee, if I could right now, if you had the number one pick in the 2023 draft, would you take Scoot Henderson or would you take Wembanyama?
I'd take Wembanyama. I am still open to the fact that opinion could change, but, and to be quite honest, I think basing a lot of that on what I saw Wembanyama do against the USA in the U19 FIBA last summer. So like watching his matchup against Chet and obviously like Jaden Ivey was in that game. Of course we're going to do a Victor pod at some point over the next couple weeks before the season starts. And we will gush about them then. But if you haven't, like, just go watch some YouTube highlights of this kind of like 7'2".
7'4" now. 7'4" now.
Or just, you know, like.
He needs like, to, he probably needs to stop growing, honestly.
Yeah, no, like, it's, you know, yeah, it's true.
But
no,
yeah, and the story that Gavoni had last week, he had him at, I think, 7'4" with an 8-foot wingspan, or like just shy.
It doesn't even look real. Like, it looks like it's like crazy. Some computer generated deep fake or something.
Yeah, the images of him standing next to Chet Holmgren or playing against Chet and him just being like noticeably taller and longer is pretty hilarious. And then also I would like to circle back, forgive me. It was Rafael Barlow who initially broke that story. So forgive me. I did want to make sure I got the name correct, but yeah, he scooped Jonathan Gavoni and Gavoni had that like 4 days later basically. But, either way, it's good news. I'm very excited to see those two guys together. Last two things very, very quickly.
Wait, Ryan, would you go Victor or would you go Scoot?
Yes, I'd go Wembanyama, but it's close. It's close, and I'm excited to dig into more of the Thompson twins. And from what I've seen of guys like Kim Whitmore, who's going to be at Villanova as a freshman this year, Derek Whitehead, who's going to be at Duke. Of course, he's coming off foot surgery. Excited to see more of him. Nick Smith. Like, there are some very intriguing one and done guards and wings that are set to arrive on college campuses this year. Gigi Jackson will be at South Carolina after flipping from the first ever UNC decommit, who will be at South. He reclassed into this grade and will be at South Carolina. We'll talk about all these guys going on, but yeah, I'd go Wembanyama, at one, but man, Scoot is right there. Like, that's how impressive of a prospect as he is. Like, truly, truly special athlete, special guard, lead guard prospect, and advantage creator. So last thing I would say, Lee, what do you think about the, I touched on this very briefly earlier on, but what do you think about, hypothetically, what would you think about the fit? Not even like you need to factor fit into these things. Like, if the Hornets have the number two pick and Scoot Henderson's there, you take, you know, you take Scoot Henderson, or maybe it's Amen Thompson. But like, what do you think about Scoot and LaMelo? Hypothetically, what do you think about that as a backcourt to build around?
You know, hypothetically, theoretically, whatever you want to call it, it's not perfect, but I think it actually works. Like you already talked about, and we have talked about at length on this podcast, how LaMelo has been ahead of schedule as a shooter based on kind of like his pre-draft evaluation throughout his career, and continues to make some improvements there. I do really want to see Scoot like shoot it at a better clip this year from deep, of course. Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to play into like not only his NBA evaluation, but it will also play into kind of like the type of guard you would want him next to. But when you start talking about these two guys in transition, LaMelo by himself is already just kind of like, you know, obviously like a one man break. And here's Scoot. I mean, you see some of the just powerful, unafraid, like above the rim. If you're not watching the video, Richie just played a video of Scoot running ahead in transition and two hand jamming on another grown man. I think it would be good. I mean, particularly if, I think the one question with those would be, we still have questions about LaMelo's point of attack defense, right?
So
although I do believe that Scoot has the tools, the physical ability, and kind of the basketball instincts and know-how to become a good point of attack defender, we haven't seen it yet. So that would still be like a pretty big question mark, I think, particularly early in Scoot's career. So other than that, though, like the offensive fit, I think, is awesome. The transition kind of ball sharing dynamic playmaking fit is like off the charts. Just becomes a question of how do they survive defensively against, you know, the most prolific like pick and roll pull up shooting guard types in the NBA.
Agreed, because right now, like, I actually agree with pretty much everything you just said. In transition, it would be dynamic, there's no doubt.
Insane.
There's Pat Mahomes throwing to Tyreek Hill style. LaMelo's slinging it to Scoot Henderson. I also think in the half court, they actually complement one another pretty well, despite the fact that they're two guys that you think should always have the basketball. We've seen both of them play very well in like secondary roles, like, you know, not even like just like an off ball secondary role, but like when the half court action dictates that they need to be that LaMelo needs to be like a connector. Obviously, he can be an incredible connector. He's an unbelievable passer, but LaMelo's not a guy that is just like automatic rim pressure, automatic rim finishing. And we know Scoot has some issues finishing through contact and size at the rim. But he's absolutely a guy that projects to being someone who's going to get a lot of 2-point attempts off a live dribble in the paint, a lot of foul creation that way. So if that's a little bit of a weakness with LaMelo, well then Scoot, that's a strength of his, right? And LaMelo is an excellent spot up relocation shooter. Excellent. One of the best spot up guys in the league this past season. And I believe 75% of his threes last year were assisted. So you all of a sudden, if you put a guy like Scoot that can be instant advantage creation. It can collapse the defense and kick out. Then all of a sudden, LaMelo is getting easy catch and shoot threes off of simple spread pick and roll or simple isolation. Plus, you put those guys together in creative pistol style sets, you know, where Scoot flies up without the basketball. LaMelo kicks it ahead to him. Then LaMelo chases that pass, and Scoot can either flip it back to LaMelo on a sprint, or he can keep it, like fake the handoff and then go into a ball screen with Mark Williams. You know, like all of a sudden you're seeing the makings of a really, really fun and dynamic half court double barrel backcourt. And with those two guys, I still think there's plenty of, there's more than enough possessions to get it, to get, you know, the requisite on ball usage and reps to keep everyone happy. And you can stagger minutes as well. Like, it's just, like I quite like the fit offensively. Defensively, you would need both those guys to continue to improve, and you would also need your third perimeter guy to probably be like a pretty low usage offensive player and also lockdown defender to be the guy that could really like take on the toughest perimeter assignments. But for the most part, I quite like the fit. I don't know if we're going to see it, but at this stage, anything's a possibility. So I say, why not dissect it?
Dream big.
With insane levels of detail here. So this has been our pod on Scoot Henderson. Lee, any final thoughts before we close this thing out?
No, man, just I'll reiterate kind of what I said at the beginning of the podcast. We'll have a few more of these prospect pods coming out as we close out the preseason over the next month and a half. And we will continue to do this throughout the season too. I think me and BG are both excited to do kind of some prospect hot or cold, who's moving up our board, who's moving down our board throughout the season as college games start off too. So that's all I got, man. This was really fun.
Yep. Absolutely. Enjoyed talking it. We'll definitely be talking more about Scoot throughout the season, but I'm glad we could finally get this thing out here. I can't wait to see him play this season in the G League. Would like to say a quick thanks to Richie for producing and putting this together and splicing in some of these clips. If you didn't listen to it, make sure to check out the recording he did with the guys from Knicks Film School. Those are good people. That's another Blue Wire podcast. I'm going to be joining Samson Folk to talk Raptors and Hornets later this weekend, which I'm excited about. So we've got some more preseason content coming for you on the horizon, and including more draft coverage as well. So thank you for tuning in. Again, make sure to subscribe to BuzzBeat Plus, and we will see you next time. Go Hornets!